January 18th, 2007. It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. sing.
That was Thelonious Monk with John Coltrane, with a partial excerpt of a live 1957 recording of a Monk tune called Epistrophe. After that, we had Floatin' by Migu. Now, this is a different show. I'm not at the Love Grotto with Brother Matt. I'm at my pad here in Pedro. And I'm bringing you pert near 2 hours of Nels Klein. We did a Banyan gig last weekend, January 13th, drove up to San Francisco to play with Perk, Willie, and Mr. Steve McKay guested with us. And so I had the chance to talk to Nels. Now, it was a windy ride, so please excuse the noise, but there's much righteous information. Now, for those of you who don't know, Nels Klein is one of my mentors, one of my musical and spiritual inspirations, and I respect him much. So here's Nels and his wisdom.
You did some with Greg Lake once, right?
Oh, not music. I was in the same building with him. He didn't perform, he wouldn't do a song. He talked about his career. It was a thing for Roland Corporation. That was in the 70s, late 70s. Yeah, I was a last-minute replacement for Scott Baxter to demonstrate the Roland and Carson class.
Shieldrum?
Yeah, totally. I had a friend that worked there. Al Cooper came out to demonstrate the vocoder. That was hilarious. These people had paid to come to the Troubadour to hear this. And so their last-minute ringer, the star, was Greg Lake. And he sat there in a white leisure suit and smoked cigarettes and talked about, answered questions about his career, which at that point had been the Love Leach album, which might be the last time on the record. I have no idea. Remember that record where they're like, look like stubble dummies on the front of the pants in front of palm trees? Oh my god. Apparently he used a Roland guitar synthesizer on that record, but everyone told me privately that they had to just put it there next to him, but he wasn't going to play because he didn't know how to use it. But neither did Scott Baxter, so neither somebody could show people what it did. That was like 1979. It was one of the biggest clusterfucks I've ever been part of in my life. And the fact that people paid to get into this was frightening. Al Cooper was great. He looked so much like Al Cooper. He had aviator sunglasses on and a football shirt. And he said, with the vocoder, he said,
yeah, it's really cool. You can make it sound like a choir. It was just too much.
Right.
Well, they were brutal.
So you just made this drive, right?
Yep.
How many weeks ago?
A couple of weeks ago.
And it was to
practice with the singers.
Right, because you just made a record with Nels Klein Singers.
Yeah, so
third album?
Had to learn my new ditties. Third album, no title yet.
But it'll be out in May?
June. After the Wilco record.
Different than the big pan in instrumentals?
Yeah, a little bit. Usually, well, some acoustic pieces. Other than that, same old shit. Quiet songs, loud songs, long songs, short songs.
You might have gotten two albums out.
Oh, yes. We were very productive. We ended up with a couple outtakes and a whole other record of free improvising. Some without any electronics or distortion. That kind of hoping to dedicate it to the late jazz guitarist and session guitarist Howard Robbins. And that was fun. Yeah, we were running way ahead of schedule, so we decided to make another record.
I'll play with Joe's. Oh, where you had the brownouts.
He's playing with Pittsburgh House.
I think it's him by himself. You know, he's doing on stand-up bass the entire process of Weeding Out. You know that
really?
Black Flag instrumental record?
Yeah, I know he's really obsessed with it. That figures.
He's doing the whole thing on solo stand-up bass.
Nice.
He wrote Kira's song called Kira that's really intense.
Oh, cool.
I guess he was a young man just hearing that stuff. And it,
Thing
on his life. He's quite a musician.
He's a really interesting guy. It's funny because a lot of these sides of his creativity that are his own work, I always find out about that way after the fact. He doesn't really... When I play with him, he just plays with me. He doesn't tell me, hey, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. So it's always a surprise.
Oh, wow.
Something else going on. His band...
He's got a lot of collaborations, but he also has the Good for Cows.
Right, but Chess being gone so much, they haven't been able to work as much. Chess has been traveling so much.
Okay.
I play with
Scott. Chess. Scott's got a lot of things going on, right? He's got his own band.
Well, he's got his own band. We've got some stuff coming up this year with Jenny Scheinman and Jeff Parker and me and John Schiff. But he was touring a lot with this singer named Madeline Peyrou, but he's not doing that anymore. I think he's a father now, so he's going to stay home and try to do stuff more in town. San Francisco, Berkeley.
And you were in New York City?
It's in New York.
You saw Elliot?
Saw Elliot.
Elliot Sharp, you got a record coming out with him?
Yeah, duo record.
Recorded in Italy?
Another record with no title. Yeah, recorded for the Long Song label in Milan. Milano.
Did you go to the Duomo?
I did not.
You gotta go there, man. That's an intense piece. It's right in the middle of town. And, I was just there a couple weeks ago and I had my mission guys, that guy's Tom and Raul, going. I mean, they're still doing a lot of reconstructions. At least 500 sculptures on the outside. You know, they just found, or not just found, but they just had a big revision on what Dante might have looked like.
Oh, really?
You know, he's always had this long, crooked nose and
face. Right, gone.
And, he's got softer lines now. I think they've got some kind of archaeological evidence and computer modeling and artists involved.
Hey, now that you mention it, Mike, my friend Fabrizio has the label, and he walked around the roof of the Duomo. He didn't go in.
Wow.
He walked around the roof.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
It
was,
did that.
But like you said, there was a lot of construction, so it was a lot of tourists.
Yeah.
We walked all over Milan. I had one day off.
The Galleria? Did you go where the tile and all the Prada and the...
Yeah. I actually went to this little music store there and bought a little, it's like a crackle box, a little electronics sound box this guy makes there. It's battery powered and plugged into my amp.
Do you know about their jazz core scene?
I've heard about it. I mean, if you're talking about
Zoo.
I definitely know those
and
guys.
And Squartet.
No, I've heard
Neo.
About them, but I haven't heard them.
Pretty incredible guitars. A lot of them are trios. I know Zoo's got some horns. They're kind of exceptions. A lot of these are bass guitar drum trios. Right. But sometimes they have other musicians.
Mods. And it's Ken Vandermark.
And Steve McKay, who we're going to see tonight.
Oh, really?
He's going to play with us.
Oh, he's... Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's part of this thing up here called the Radon Collective.
Right.
And they have some collaborations. But a lot of these are trio, guitar-based drum trios. Usually the bass player plays kind of a funk thing.
Yeah, I've heard one of
and
these.
And kind of math, speedo drummers.
Oh,
and then
these
wailer guitars hardly ever sing it. So usually instrumental.
Right. I'm in Massimo about, it's like 5 years ago. We put on some shows that the singers in Italy. We did a little mini tour from Massimo for the shows.
Yeah.
Played with them in Rome. With Dialect also, the rap group.
Yeah.
And I just played Vancouver Jazz Festival this last summer, and Zoo were up there, so I saw those guys. And I saw them play with Mods. And they stayed at my house when they played in LA.
Where I went to Spaceland? I played with them.
Yep, you were there.
Dose.
It was like like one of the greatest Bills ever assembled, except that Chuck didn't play because they wouldn't let his son in.
That's right. Chuck 2006 10.
Yep. Saccharin play.
Saccharin. Did you hear about Richie Haas?
No.
Bone cancer.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know where I first saw him play was Zoot Drift.
I think I saw him in Paper Bag.
In that Paper Bag.
Yeah.
Do you remember Zoot Drift?
Yeah, his amazing shitheads. I never saw Zoot.
Oh, no, I played Bills with him.
I'm sure.
And he usually plays sitting
what
down.
What happened?
I don't know. But big beef heart aficionado.
Big beef heart Zappa, so I always wanted to get
it. Trippy guy, the bass player, I don't know, can't remember his name, but he's one of the first guys I saw to play with heavy fingernail polish. Yeah. They were good. So that's really sad about Richie.
That sucks.
He's been playing vibes with Saccharin.
Yeah, electric vibes. I think ever since he did that record, The Great One Is Dead, and then he joined, and I wish that he had been playing when they recorded that, because they haven't recorded anything else, and he's been playing with them now for like 5 years.
Yeah.
It's like, right. What's up with that?
Yeah.
I actually talked to Jack about it, because when Joe got really sick last year for a minute, Jack got all scared, and he told me, he said, I really kind of put a scare into me. I thought, we should be recording. And I said, Jack, man, I will lend you money to go and record some stuff. He said, no, we're going to do it. We're going to go to Canasonic, and we're going to do some stuff. And I'll bet you anything they never did. And I don't know what's up with that. I know he's got his construction work, but I still think at the point that they're at now with Richie and Brian Christopherson in the band, that they're one of the greatest bands of all time. So I think.
No, I really like Big Saccharin Trust Band.
Jackson.
The Great One Is Dead. I've got that. I've played it. Play some more.
It's great. Can't find it anywhere, I guess. It's really a big fame.
Gonna go tour with the Rovers?
Well, we have a gig in Paris.
But you did something last year with them, right?
We did a few things.
Coltrane Ascension?
We always do like an Ascension. We did it once in Lisbon. And we did it in Vancouver, the Jazz Festival. We did it last Easter up in San Francisco.
You know, these iPods you can use for alarm clocks. That's why I use for the chime. And it also goes on for 40 minutes. Better wake up. I mean, it's a rouser. But have you guys recorded that?
Yeah, the first time we ever did it was recorded and released on Atavistic.
Oh, Atavistic.
And I think that the band that's playing in Paris late this month is the same as the original lineup, except for Carla Kilstead, I think, cannot play violin. Because the original had Jenny Scheime and Carla Kilstead.
Is there a trumpet?
There has been in the past, but no, not original.
Because Hubbard is a big part of that thing.
Well, the whole idea of Ascension from the Rover standpoint is to do it with electric instruments and see if it's still Ascension.
Okay.
So basically, Fred Frith plays electric bass, and I'm playing electric guitar, Don Robinson.
One bass?
With Fred, yeah. We've done it with two. We've done it with Trevor.
Yeah, because the original had two. Right?
And Lyle Ellis. And we did it with Devin Hoff.
Oh, wow.
We've done it with Scott Amendola, Tom Rainey. It's not always the same people. Andrew Parkins has done it. Chris Brown.
What's consistent about it?
Rova, and so far, Rova and me.
Okay. It's like the Willie Perkins Texas Abandon.
Yeah. For some reason, Larry does most, doesn't seem to want to do it when I can't do it, which is very charming. But
Dr. Art Davis was on the original.
Yeah.
You've got to play with him.
Yeah, it's been years, though. I think he got all mad at me because this guy I know recorded him to make a record for a label that this guy knew, and then got a budget together and all this stuff, and Art was all, called me up and said, this boy, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, he's a great guy, and I don't know what he knows about jazz, but he's a really cool guy, and you know him, but I'm not going to mention his name because it's just too embarrassing. And Murray flew in from Paris to play on it. He had a whole band assembled, and right after when everyone arrived in LA to record, this guy who ran this distributor and label pulled a plug on the whole thing. No money. And everyone was here for no reason. I got this call.
Like Katie would say, standing there with my dick in my hand.
Yeah, yeah. So I got this call from Dr. Hart saying, like, what's up with this? I thought this guy's your friend. And he was all mad. I just said, look, man, it's not his fault. I'm sorry this went down this way, and I haven't heard from Dr. Hart since. I think he feels like I was, like, somehow leading him astray. Maybe. I don't know.
It's hot.
Very regrettable situation, if you can say that. It's very, very lame. And it's friend of mine, he's not a good friend, he's just somebody I've known for years and years. I'm sure I had no idea this guy was going to play. Anyway, it was bad. I haven't talked to Dr. Ross since then.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I saw you do something at Lacma, man. That was righteous.
You played with Bobby Bradford's
friend. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when he and I first played together. The craziest gig of all was at Borders Books and Music in Long Beach a few years ago. We played a pre-concert as a trio with me and Dr. Art and Billy Higgins.
Oh, wow.
That was a little nerve-wracking.
That would have been one of Billy's last gigs.
It was about a year before he died. Yeah. It sounded great, man.
Did you get a recording of it?
I have a cassette bootleg. I stuck a cassette player under my hair.
Your hair?
Under my chair.
Oh, your chair.
I had my amp up on a chair.
Oh, like the Buddy Rich thing on the bus.
Kind of stashed it under there.
You want a job or you want a beer?
Hey, man, my space player played with Kermit Driscoll. He was on that bus.
Oh,
He said those guys totally deserved what they got from Buddy Rich.
They were sucking out loud.
I said, how many times did he fire you, Kermit? He said, oh, I think about five. He always rehired me the next day.
but he said those dudes played weak. See, we never get to hear, so we don't know. And we get all this sympathy or empathy for them.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's too much excuse for the rage-a-thon. But he said they were pretty much sucking when he was letting them happen. But he fired Kermit.
Of course, you had to move on, though, to more important things like beards.
Right.
You know, get to the real meat and potatoes, you know, notes. Well, let's get to the important.
I heard a story that they would play quite often at Disneyland, and the Buddy Rich Big Band would. And he went off on some guy's sock choice, like he was wearing the wrong color socks. And he cussed this guy out in front of all these kids and their parents. He had a complete rage fit at Disneyland about this guy's socks.
It's probably.
And I wonder if that was an all LA band.
Yeah, right. Try me.
Don't think I won't.
Tonight. Yeah, tough for you to take me to the Union. Love it.
Yeah, this is the black belt in karate. How many heart attacks did he have?
Oh, man. How dare you? That's the thing, the contempt in the voice.
Right, right.
I mean, it is a rage at that, but then there's, you know. And then the total resignation. You're not my kind of people. None of you.
I forgot about that line.
I'm up there. Busting my balls. How dare you? You're breaking my heart up there.
I got a friend of mine from junior high school works at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
In the Museum of American History. And she arranged for Wilco to have a little private tour while they're rebuilding, reconstructing the museum of the musical instrument archive.
Oh, wow, I saw some of that there.
And they had one of Buddy's snare drums.
Yeah, and Dizzy's horn, or one of his horns.
But none of it was on exhibit because they just let us walk around. And so I held Charlie Christian's guitar.
Wow.
That was kind of a mind blow, I gotta tell you.
Was it light?
That's what beautiful. It had, guess what? It had the Charlie Christian pickup truck.
But was it really light?
Yeah.
I would figure.
It's a beautiful jazz box.
And also the wood just being older and dried out.
It's great. And they had the...
You just held it. You didn't play it.
No, you know, it was all, the strings were all slack. Maybe I wasn't tuned.
Is that a good thing to do? Nerds, you're always supposed to have some kind of tension unless it's flying.
I think they should have it under tension myself.
Yeah. Or the neck will go.
They had a guitar that had the blonde Oliva cotton.
Oh, wow.
That was fun. We held that.
Cotton picking. Yeah. She came up with that style that Bob Dylan used early on.
Yeah, totally. And actually, the mind blow of mind blows was that they had stuff from their popular culture collection. It was just sitting in big cabinets, which is all stuff that's normally under glass, you know, it's just sitting there because it has to be stored somewhere while they completely redesign the interior of the museum space.
Right.
They said, well, I wonder what's in this cabinet, and they opened it up, and all in one cabinet just sitting there, and I know there was more that I can't remember, was the first Singer sewing machine, the first Barbie, Minnie Pearl's hat, microphone that FDR addressed the nation on, that's on his desk. The first polio vaccine in a vial. Penicillin culture in the petri dish from Louis Pasteur's lab. Autographed boxing gloves of Muhammad Ali. And all kinds of really weird stuff. Anyway, it was really amazing. It's like kind of jarring. All these different kind of associations you have with all these different things, all just sitting in one cabinet. It's pretty strange.
Yeah,
really
a lot of places like that.
And then they have all these things left over from TV shows that have all been donated. I saw this really cool pair of boots. I like boots. Really scuffed up. I said, where are these boots? And no one knew. So they had to ask around and see who knew what these boots were. They were Hawkeye from Nash's boots from the TV show. Just like these towns that appear that are actually not the town. The town is way either east or west.
Right.
And Patterson. When did Patterson emerge? All of a sudden there's Patterson. You know, right before you... get to Wesley. Now, Wesley's a real town if you go east.
Yeah.
But anyway, Patterson. Is that new? I don't know.
Well, Wasco, you know, it's not right on that side. You got to go east.
Well, same with Coalinga.
Right, west of them.
And Gustine. Los Banos.
You know, people have the trippiest ideas of Cali. You know, because of this Hollywood thing.
Sure.
They don't know we're actually a farm state. They actually should drive around here.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I'm not just talking about foreigners. I'm talking about other U.S. people. They just
have no idea
of our state. Take this I-5 route.
But just seeing all the
people. People are there playing with Whiteout.
Right.
I mean, you know what was trippy, I noticed? Hardly did any fretwork.
I think the most extreme example of that is when I used to play duo a lot with Devin Sarno. And Devin and I would play. I used to joke that I barely ever fret the guitar.
You're doing something new with him soon, right?
We're going to record together.
Now you've made two albums. One of them's Edible Flower.
Edible Flowers and Buried on Bunker Hill.
Buried on Bunker Hill.
Yeah, I made a vinyl record. Made a vinyl record. For, remember those guys over at No Life Records?
Yeah.
Well, they had a label for a minute. They're called Bolo. Then we did a vinyl record. The first thing we ever did was a vinyl record called Rise from the Rise. Now, long out of print. As is Edible Flower section. So Devin and I are going to do some recording together in a couple of weeks.
I think Edible Flowers is weird. His own label. You
know? Yeah, when he had that. It's long, it'd be fun. Defunct.
Oh.
He and Tom Grimley used to do that.
That's right, the Poop Valley guy.
Right. Tom doesn't do any of that stuff anymore.
That's all over?
He bailed out of that a long time ago. Yeah, that's where I, that's where Devin and I recorded Rise Pumpkin Rise, and it's also where, Tom and I recorded
the Lord Goldie Cats. Governor? Have somebody named Pumpkin?
Yeah, this was actually called Rise Pumpkin Rise because, I knew that Devin really liked Pumpkin. Pumpkin's a friend of mine. Pumpkin and Jazzy, Governor, are friends of mine.
They were in the band Governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we actually sort of appropriated
one of their album
covers. Yeah. We just took Pumpkin's hand from the cover of this, their album, the name of which escapes me now, but there's a picture of Pumpkin on the cover eating some weird fruit. And so, just took her face out of it and just kept her hand there because Volvolo is just doing these all black covers, black cardboard covers. So that's it, just her hand. She started a company that does maternity clothes. Pumpkin Maternity.
Yeah.
They even have a store in LA now.
They live in LA?
No, but I think they have a store there. Oh, I know that Wendy Mullen, built by Wendy, has a store now.
Did you see Sonic Youth at Altamars?
Yeah, both times.
I saw him the first time. And I thought it was really good.
It was really good. Wow. Second night was even maybe a little bit better.
Steve Shelley. I mean, he's always good, but man, he really wowed me big time. And Thurston on the bass.
Yeah, they played The World is Red.
And
there were some surprises in there.
Yeah, Shaking no Hell. More Brother James.
Like Shaking Hell.
I gotta get that one back. PCH.
Yep. Not both nights though. I'm trying to remember now. Well, anyway, let's see. New pedals. I don't think there's that much. You know, I kind of tend to, especially with Banyan, stick with what works, which is always the same stuff.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of pedals. I did bring my Bitfly Electronics Pitch Pirate today, which I've never used with Banyan. Which will.
Pitch Pilot?
Pirate. Yeah,
arr,
Pitch Pirate.
Arr. The pitches, they'll be shifting.
You know, our high school's the Pirates, right? We're Sam Peter High Pirates.
Of course. Makes perfect sense.
Black and gold.
But I think that's.
What's
about,
it do?
It basically creates either a kind of a square pitch shifting wave or a curved one, which is more like vibrato. And when it's in extremely wide mode, it sounds kind of like some kind of analog synthesizer sound. But I'd probably be using it to make it sound like a broken, like a cassette with a wrinkle in it.
You know about these Moog ones?
The Booger Boogers.
Yeah, Dr. Shani had like 6 or 7 of them.
I'm an
They were at different settings.
I'm an endorsee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have I seen you play one?
No. I have, but I hardly ever use them.
So like Greg Lake?
I like the verb.
You just take the picture with you standing next to it?
Well, they don't give it to me. But I like the Booger Booger ring modulator is great. The analog delays are pretty cool. Jeff Tweedy's in love with their analog delay sound.
But you like the...
I like the Merv. So
your delay is the old 1670.
Yeah, I can't live without that.
Yeah.
It's been acting a little funny. I hope
Electro Harmonix?
Yeah. One from the 80s. They reissued it, and it's not the same thing. They wasted 11. They put like 1,000 of those rare chips on this piece of crap. I couldn't believe they didn't have the double shot. I'm frapping. I never buy these. This is kind of like
frap is like what Georgie would call his first farts in the morning.
I know. I remember. That's why I'm bringing it up, so to speak.
Torch meal.
But no, I have to have a coffee drink with my nuts and berries.
Wow, look at that bird. Some of these birds. There's three things that keep me humble on the road. Bird spots on the side, interesting angles. Skid marks at interesting angles. And then the little white crosses.
Oh, God, yeah.
What about amperage?
Still an old Oliver amp. I bought a lot of stuff this year. But it's not stuff I could use with banging because none of it's loud enough. Even
my amp's still not loud enough.
Yeah. with Wilco, you're still using the...
I use Jeff Tweedy's Marshall.
Right.
But I bought a Deluxe Fender, Deluxe Reverb reissue for home use. Just kind of take it to gigs where I don't have to play real loud. I don't need a big amp. Or I have a high watt Bulldog from the 70s, which I really wanted to bring for this. If I could have figured out a way to rig an extension cabinet, I might have given it a whirl. See if I get a little high watt tone on the Banyan set.
That's from Ohio. I had one of those. Good sounding.
Yeah. And I bought a little tiny Silvertone this year just for recording. Grungy little sounding Silvertone amp from the 50s. And, boy, a bunch of stuff is in Chicago. I bought some strange guitars.
Like what?
I bought an Echo from the mid-60s.
Italian?
Yeah. For basically the no-tone, no-sustain sound. It's really great. And,
a tone dampener. Get rid of any unwanted tone.
Right. I bought a 50s Silvertone, kind of like a jazz guitar, big hollow body. Lo-fi pickups. Really nice guitar, kind of unusual.
Can it tune?
Yeah. I put a Fishman wooden bridge in it that has pickup in the bridge, so it's kind of like a piezo pickup in the bridge, so I can now
have stand-up.
Either the pickups or the bridge sound, I can combine them. So I want working towards this music, but I want to do this really subtle and sort of electro-acoustic. I want you to be able to play soft enough to be able to hear the actual guitar instantly, but still have it amplified also, and have different tone properties. Just multiple guitars, overtones, really quiet.
Future projects.
Well, that would be one. But
what are other ones you got planned?
I'm going to record some duets with Zena Parkins this year.
Harp player.
And in New York probably in early April. And really hoping still now, you know, we've just done the singer's record, but really hoping to do some recording with Calvin Newborn. I don't know how to make that happen exactly, but we're talking about it. We both want to do it. We've got to do something to get this happening with Calvin and the singers. I maybe some Latin percussionists on a couple of tracks and get some groove going. I think he's been working on some material, and I don't know. So I'd like to do that. And there's some other stuff coming up. I'm hoping to play a little bit on Oak Young Lee's next record. She's a great cellist in New York.
You know what it would be interesting for me to see you do with the singers is take on a Mingus song and have Devin, one of his really twisted Ellington-esque things.
Sure, you know, the thing about those songs,
jazz cumbia.
They're really hard.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, cumbia and jazz fusion is,
that's
is one of my favorite
jazz
records. And I would love to see some of that stuff. What would I do with my trail mix? Oh, I know it.
Directives.
Those songs are hard.
Yeah, they're incredible.
And, you know, the reason I did, it's kind of funny you mentioned this, because the reason I did the record of Andrew Hill music was because not only did I think it would fit the instrumentalist that I chose to play, but I thought it was music that was severely underplayed. No one is playing it at all. Everyone says, oh, it's so wonderful, it's so classic, it's on Blue Note, but no one plays it. And in a way, kind of, Mingus is kind of like that too, except way more played than Andrew Hill. But a lot of people avoid his material, or they just play Goodbye Part 5 at. I've thought about this a lot. And it would be fun to do. We did record Jackie by Thelonious Monk on this singer session, but it won't make the record. It was just something we threw in there. I've maxed out the format on this record. There's no room. It's like a 2-minute version of Jackie and still can't fit it on. Oh, well.
It's great. Those things that came out last year with Coltrane.
Oh, my God. It's one of the most super
superhuman saxophone play I've ever heard. That's when technique is truly noticeable.
And spirit.
And the service of art rather than pure mechanics.
Anyway, I bet you Kevin could handle it.
Oh, yeah.
And,
no doubt. I have a friend who shall remain nameless, who's a music writer in Los Angeles, who's repeatedly claimed to me Dominguez is completely overrated, because if he was really any good, more people would play his songs, and we would have had more hits, more noticed jazz standards, to which I could only chafe and protest.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting perception, certainly.
Well, it's like those guys calling Coltrane anti-jazz. Why, he was alive.
Oh, I know. Modal jazz had no chord changes, so there was one jazz. And then, of course, he went even further out. And they just gave up on it, mostly. You know, Ascension, they reviewed twice the downbeat, the same issue. Point, counterpoint. For and against. Pretty funny. I don't think it would have affected the guy who didn't like it, which snake it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really think that Coltrane should have gone with Take Two.
Did you hear Ornette's new thing?
The live record?
He's got a new record.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I have it. The band's great. It reminds me of, in some ways, bootlegs I have where David Isaacson and Charlie Hayden both play. David Isaacson takes the bow, Charlie takes the pizzicato, and great stuff. Ornette sounds great. DiNardo sounds great on it. Some of the best DiNardo for sure on record.
Really good.
Yep. Good record. But I think it's in a way kind of a tease. It's almost like a live gig. He does redo some older material. There's some song X on there, the record of Pat Metheny, which by the way came out a couple of years ago with extra tracks. Boy, is that great. But anyway, that band's been playing together now for a while. They rehearse constantly. You know there's got to be something else recorded, something holding out on us. Something else going to come out.
Taunt.
And I want to hear it.
Yeah,
I get a little taunt going on. This is the sound of me eating almonds, folks.
Mr. Toby's going to make a solo album.
Solo? All right,
like Psychic Heart.
This sounds like a good idea. Last time I took this rough drive 2 weeks ago,
Yeah. Somebody
must have, maybe they fell asleep at the wheel or something. As I was approaching, I saw this big cloud of dust, and somebody had actually spun out and ended up facing the wrong direction all the way in a field. But their car was, at least it wasn't upside down.
Yeah, it was on all the tires.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, there's are you going to tour in the fall in the States at all?
I know for sure there's a Stooges tour April, all of April. And they were talking about maybe October. And I had, told Vig that 2007 I would, give him. So I can't really plan that much.
Yeah, this is like my life. Okay.
But I really want it.
I'm sorry, I can't plan that. Well, if you do, I would like to for you to consider maybe doing some opening Wilco stuff. And I think everybody would want you to do it if you're interested.
What, this event?
Yeah.
I mean, we're a new band still, but
we're going to tour like crazy in the States in the fall. At least some big shows. Well, Jeff Tweedy's first instrument was bass.
Yeah, I played with him. Yeah, with Meyerhoes and Uncle Tupelo.
And guess who his favorite bass player was? He had to pick up a bass back then.
Jeff record Billy Bragg?
They did the Mermaid Avenue sessions. They did the Woody Guthrie lyrics that were in that suitcase, in that box. written about in the Dylan Chronicles.
Oh, you know? Oh.
So somehow Billy Bragg got a hold of those, and they made two CDs, sort of trading off singing.
He's born on her birthday, Pete.
Billy Bragg.
Oh.
And Wilco still plays a lot of the songs that Jeff sang on those. Some of my favorite stuff we do, actually. Mountain Bed, One by One, California Stars, you know, some good stuff.
You spent a lot of time in Chicago.
Yes. Yes, I do. I like the music scene there. It's very, there's a certain militance about it that isn't too obnoxious. It just means that they do a lot of themselves. And they really know how to put on a music festival. They seem to have a lot of them. People seem to go to them. It's nice.
There was a big one, right? Touch and Go?
Touch and Go, yeah. But Pitchfork was cool. They do Intonation Festival.
Maybe McIntosh. Oh, because the Crayola.
McIntosh is moving to L.A.
Is he?
In his studio. Selma's coming west.
Tom wanted me to record with McIntyre.
Yeah, you should. Oh, that's excellent work.
Yeah, I got to talk with him when we did an Altamont party together.
Well, in fact, you know, it's funny that this has come up because I was just thinking yesterday that I should email him and see what he was talking about possibly being in L.A. as early as this month.
Wow.
And I haven't heard anything about it. I was going to try to see if I could help him find space or what he's looking at or do any field work for him. So I'm actually going to, when I get home, I got to write him to see what's up. I'm sure he had a lot of people taking care of stuff, but yeah, he wants to bring his whole analog synthesizer wall to Los Angeles. It sounds risky to me, but the same time he could offer something maybe a few others could offer, and even if he's only getting some kind of a percentage of the amount of work that goes on in L.A., it's a pretty high percentage maybe compared to Chicago, for all I know. I don't know how much interests me to, you know, after hearing people rank on my town for so long, people actually will have to think about moving, coming to it. But, you know, my new thing is I don't defend it anymore. Now I tell people they hate it. Tell all their friends to start hating it too, because then maybe it'll take under an hour for me to get my boss back to my place. Stay out.
I just tell the Pedroid to like the rest.
Well, that's true.
Even a lot of Pedro people, they don't know because they just, you know, TV party. Couch. Guard the couch.
See, you guys don't know, my dad grew up in San Diego.
Yeah.
And he was born downtown L.A. I moved when he was about four. So all my dad's side of the family, when I was growing up, was always trips to Pedro. And my ex-wife's parents met in Pedro. They live in Carson. They live in Pedro now. And my friend Carla,
Pedro. Pedro. So Dallas, but he's unusual for LA. Yeah, a lot of SoCal people don't know Pedro.
No, they never even go there.
Yeah. Because we're at the end of the freeway, you don't really pass through.
A lot of people don't know where it is.
Yeah.
The only time my Volvo ever stranded me was on this drive right up here.
I thought it was a trooper, right? Trooper went down on this drive.
That was coming from Grants Pass. Made it into California.
Right. Like you left it.
Blew a head gasket. Had to leave it in Reading. Sold it through the newspaper. Took a U-Haul for the rest of the tour. That looked kind of threw me because the only U-Haul they had, the only truck they had available, was way too big. So we had Carl and I had our gears in the little corner. You know, two people, we got a lot of gear for two people. Then I had to drive through San Francisco rush hour to make it for a radio thing that we were doing. Man, I was freaking out. It was so big, and like San Francisco cars everywhere. This bus pulled out half the mirror out. Bash right in the mirror.
Whoa.
Didn't even stop. Just kept going.
Yeah.
Fortunately, when I turned in the truck, they didn't notice. I thought, oh no, I'm gonna be buying a mirror at three times the price. But no. I lucked out. Yeah. Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
Because there are no engines to replace.
Sure.
Those old Super Trooper engines. There's nothing.
It was out of the race.
And of course, we had just tinted the windows, put in the car stereo, and the alarm.
All the boards.
Kaboom! It's just white columns of white steam pouring out of the back of the car.
Is your gear out now that you've noticed that you'd like to get? Some pedals, amps, guitars.
Man, I just got my Holy Grail guitar just now. I'm embarrassed to talk about it because it's expensive. But I bought.
Not like you'd like to get, but you did.
I got it. Wow. I think I better stop. My friend Frankie Montoro is actually custom building me an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to get that this spring. And really the only thing.
What is it? Spanish?
It'll be a steel string.
Steel string.
Yeah. It's built under tension, slightly arched top. I'm having him tell me as little about it as possible because I kind of want to be surprised. He knows what I like. And he's a genius, so we'll see what happens. This is where my car went out of commission. I actually nursed it all the way up this ramp and got it right to that stop sign. And then it poured rain right as I got out of the car. It was fun. But Scott Amendola had a session in L.A.
Yeah.
And had left, and he was about an hour ahead of me, so he just turned back around and picked me up.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Anyway, there's really nothing out there I'm seeking to acquire at this point. I still want to, you know...
What did you acquire?
Oh, yeah, the Gibson Howard Roberts jazz guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's from the 70s, 77. The most expensive guitar I've ever acquired. Oh, no. You know, this is a joke. It's like, I've never paid up until now more than $3,000 for that guitar. People who play fine acoustic instruments just look at people like me and just think we're all the luckiest people alive because, although stupid, because we whine about spending more than $1,000 for a guitar, they have to spend $30,000 for a beautiful instrument at least. So, yeah, it was a lot. I can't really justify it because I'm not going to play it all the time. But it's just one of those things. It's the only jazz guitar I ever wanted to own. And I played it on this little recording session because I kind of got it before I bought it from the guys, my buddies at Tree Tone Music. And,
where's that?
Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a righteous store. And that was it. I mean, I had my friend who used to work there take a look at it because he was helping out. So I was trying to get him to talk me out of it. And he said, come on, man, you gotta check it out because I really gotta talk me out of this. And he said, this is Paul, he's an incredible pedals expert, you know, my pedal board and stuff. He said, dude, you have to get it. No! That's not what you were supposed to tell me. You know, I just don't know.
Yeah, he's got a bunch, but they're not one place.
In Chicago and in L.A. So I've decided to acquire a lot of duplicate gear. So I don't have to
carry it back.
I don't have to carry it back and forth.
Because the schlep is hard on them. It's fucked for your traveling.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I still end up moving stuff around. But not like it would be.
Is that because of Muku? Is that why you're always on there?
Yeah. So I have a whole world of stuff in the Wilco lot. And then I have a bunch of guitars at home. And some amps. Little amps. Not a lot of amps. But you know, I don't feel so bad when I see how many beautiful things Mr. Tweedy has. So, he's got an amazing collection of instruments. And he plays with Jeff Tweedy.
He
plays his guitars and he takes them on tour. He doesn't put them under glass cases and crate.
Works.
Yeah, he likes to play it.
A lot of cats trip out on mine. I know what you mean about them looking at the beat up.
Yeah, I mean, but that's why I don't buy. Very rarely do I ever buy any guitars that are.
I think I'm kind of hard on you.
You are? So am I.
Oh, you definitely are.
Yeah, well, so are you, man. I've looked at your bass. I know what that Thunderbird came out looking like. It wasn't very blue after a while. And then, now the EV3 is kind
not
of.
Not very red.
Kind of wood grain.
And then it's also getting thinner.
Oh, man,
I'm wearing
losing,
down the wood.
I'm losing fingerboard on that 59. I might have to get a graft eventually because it's just starting to get scalloped. Well, I have 5 Jazz Masters now, but only 2 of them are real Fenders.
Oh,
the others are just fake ones that I have sort of cobbled together. For one of them, I got these pickups from Seymour Duncan, custom made. They do on order. They're just.
You ever met him?
No, I'd like to.
He's telling.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Well, I know he loves Jazz Masters, and he makes really great. The Antiquity pickups are really great. But beyond that, they also make a PAF that looks like a Jazz Master pickup that fits right in the routing.
Yeah.
So I just got these pickups, and I stick them in one of these sort of souped up Japanese Jazz Masters that my friend Frankie kind of tried to make into a better guitar.
Right.
And that way we can play some of these old auditoriums where they've wired everything, all the power is routed right into the stage.
Yeah.
So everything's humming like crazy.
Right, right.
I'll have one guitar that doesn't hum. All my guitars are single coil. So I spent the whole night not able to move. I put a piece of gaff tape on the stage.
What about a pickup strong? Does that help?
Only when it's out of phase set.
Yeah, of course.
But I can't play like that all night.
You know, like hollow.
Sounds really bizarre.
Dale Rogers. Dale Rogers.
Oh, I love that sound. Oh, but to address your question, for me to be thinking about acquiring anything now would be kind of obscene. I'd say.
Like a shit hoarder?
Yeah. It's not the, you know, I do want to get a Jerry Jones guitar lens, which I've been wanting for a long time.
What?
The guitar lens, the one that goes another octave higher.
Wow.
It's like it goes in the mandolin range. He stopped making them years ago. Now he's making them in limited production. You know, I love these.
How does he do that? He just has the fretboard
going.
He
keeps going, man. It's like the lyre-shaped guitar, complete access to the upper register.
Longhorn.
Yep. And so, and I love Jerry Jones' stuff. You know, I love his 12 strings.
I like Dan Electro.
Yeah, but beautifully made.
Yeah.
Such great guitars.
He's got one, a baritone or something?
I've got the baritone, I've got 2 12 strings, 6 string, and the shorty 12 string, the little octave 12 string. That's
Wow.
That's also long arm shape, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
So it's like a little bow and arrow. Not a bow and arrow, what are those?
Crossbow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool, and the stuff is great. So, and I told him if he ever reissued it, that I'd get one.
Well, what about on the pedal seat? At least they don't take up as much room.
Man, I have so many fuzz boxes.
Yeah.
People give them to me.
Yeah.
I get them. Somebody says, here, try this. Keep it if you don't like it. So now I have this pantry in my place.
Yeah.
It's just all filled with pedals. And that's just the stuff that I'm not using.
Pedal board.
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of scary. But, no, there's always something out there that's fascinating, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, who's doing new things with pedals now?
Man, I love this guy Doug at Mid-Fi Electronics. His stuff's super raw, and most of it's not practical for the real world. But for people like me who want to buy a pedal that makes everything sound broken, for example, just get the Mid-Fi Electronics, the Lich computer, and it just makes everything sound like it's exploding. So great. And then he makes this thing called the random number generator, and that kind of just bounces frequencies.
January 18, 2007. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show. And Here's the other part of my interview with Nels Klein. This was done the next day, January 14, 2007, on our way home from San Francisco. In fact, Nels is behind the wheel because I wanted him to have a shot at driving a V10 Triton E350 Econoline van. He dug the boat, said she moved smooth. And sorry about the quality on this part because the automatic gain switch on the little recording device on the iPod got switched on, and that introduced some funky sound, I don't know, distortions. And of course the wind is blowing hard, but still there's the insights of Mr. Klein still there for you to pick up on. Nels Klein is one of my mentors, one of my musical and spiritual inspirations, and I respect him much. So here's Nels and his wisdom.
One at a time.
One at a time.
And what you like about each one, and what you don't like about each one. Start with your oldest, and go to the newest.
My oldest.
That's your own.
Oldest, like when it was made, or how long I've
No, had. As long as you've had.
No.
Watch out.
It's already... I've had the longest. It's my first electric guitar. It was a Melody. One pickup. My dad bought it. A student at his junior high school where he taught in West L.A. Emerson Junior High. And it has a baseball bat for a neck. It's a little tiny guitar. It still works. It's a little bit... sunned and has a little bit of sun warpage on the big guitar because I used it for a display in the 80s for the Sonic Youth Meatball album. A window display, and I stuck drumsticks in the neck and hung it in the window and shot silly string all over the whole window, so it looked sort of like the swirls on the cover of Meatball. That was procured when I was about 11 years old, I guess, 1966, 67. I have my nylon string guitar I've had since I graduated high school.
Well, what do you like about that guitar?
Very little. Just that it's my first guitar, I think. It doesn't sound or play very well.
That's what you don't like about it.
Yeah. But it's my first guitar. I still got it. I gave away the two after that. Sold my Unibox Les Paul copy. It's a horrible guitar. Couldn't believe I could get $100 for it.
What'd you do?
But I did. A girl who bought it came with her dad. I hope she's still playing. Then I got this nylon string guitar. $200 guitar. Kazuo Yairi, Japanese handmade. Cheap. Bought it like 1975, probably. 74. Bought new. At a music store on Western Boulevard that's long gone. I can't think of the name of it now. His two brothers owned it. I guess actually maybe before the nylon string, I had my 335, which I still have. It's in Chicago. Hollow body electric, bought new in 1971. And my folks inherited some money. My dad's Aunt B. That's a beautiful guitar. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
What do you like about it?
The neck is beautiful. That's why I kind of picked it for its... I was more of a Gibson guy back then. Picked it for its sound and feel. It's got a nice big body. You get your arm on it. You know? It's kind of the Chuck Berry, BB King style guitar. So that's still in Chicago. It's in really good shape. I've scratched it a lot, scratching on it, the big chords, but still in really good condition. And, hollow body guitars tend to beat back a little high volume. But, 71, so they do.
What about that nylon string? What do you like about now?
Well, what I like about it is it records well. People still hear it and think it's a good guitar. But it's actually a student model guitar. It's very inexpensive, even at 70s. So because in those days you could still make guitars that weren't even premium guitars out of decent wood. This sounds pretty good. It records a lot better than it sounds in real life. The thing that's hard about it is that as a Zeus model, it's not really meant to be played up to a high of the guitar, so it doesn't play quite as in tune as I'd like. The upper register is certainly not supposed to be played up there. You're not supposed to be good enough to give you one of those guitars if you wanted to do that. But then, while I was in high school, after the 335, I bought a used Rickenbacker 12-string. Really tiny one, like the John Lennon guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I still don't know how I ever played it. The strings are so close together, the neck's so small. It's just a mystery to me. But I played it all the time in high school. I still have it, but it's all damaged now. And it got water damaged, and the lamination came unglued. It's split right in half.
Oops. So that's kind of a negative.
And it was thrashed already anyway. The neck was ruined. The frets were non-existent. So I just started playing it with screwdrivers and stuff.
Oh.
And I totally destroyed the neck.
What, like thirsted?
Yeah. I was trying to do a lot of that stuff. I knew the neck was crashed anyway.
Right.
You know, those necks are lacquered.
Yeah.
So nobody will touch them. They're such a pain in the ass to work on. Apparently you just touch one thing and everything crumbles. So I've never really found anybody to fix it. Jeez. I got my little 1952 Martin W0017 acoustic steel string. I got that out in the 70s, the late 70s, for $250. Western Music. Mahogany, it's all mahogany. It was kind of a low budget guitar back in the day.
Mahogany's front.
Everything's gone. Everything's mahogany. And
not as loud.
Not
goes
as loud.
Into the Thompson likes mahogany tops.
Oh really?
Yeah. And you know my little bass is mahogany. I know it ain't loud.
Right.
Like a maple or a spruce.
Right.
But there's a weird roundness about it that's kind of interesting.
Well, I've loved this guitar forever. I played a lot of acoustic guitars before I bought it. My dad lent me the money to get it.
How much?
$250.
Wow.
Yep. It was a deal. I think it's worth a lot of money now. Whoever had it before, I think, just played it at campfires or something. The case was way too big for the guitar. It was a really cheap case. The action was about an inch off the neck.
Yeah. Bow and arrow.
All open, first position chords, I'm sure. It's small, and it actually is really even.
We had it worked on in the action.
Yeah. And I've used it on pretty much everything where you've ever heard me play an acoustic steel string. Except things I had to do, like with Elliot Sharp in New York or in Milan, where we borrowed guitars.
Okay.
And I just recorded with this guitar on the new Singers record, two acoustic songs. And everybody kept saying, wow, the guitar sounds great.
Jeff San Martin.
Yeah. Jeff Gauthier was all happy because that's the guitar I always played in quartet music. That and my Taylor 12-string and my little Yairi. So after the farm, I got the Taylor 12-string. I'd only been in business for about 2 years at that time. I was still in Lemon Grove outside of San Diego. And it was a sort of guild-style jumbo. And I still have it. It still sounds amazing. And unlike the current Taylors, it ages. So it's just getting better and better. Now they shoot it with this kind of plastic, this kind of marathon. Wood doesn't really age. It protects the wood, but it doesn't also doesn't let
somebody
it
dry out, yeah. And there's something about...
And I wanted to sound
I know
like,
that with my older basses, there's something about the wood being around.
Yeah. I think that's why old instruments tend to be valued.
Right.
They start to sound really good. And boy, the Taylor's a beautiful guitar. I was looking for something that would give me that kind of Ralph Towner 12-string sound. And I played some guilds like he plays. And when I heard these Taylors, I just had to get it. At that time, it was by far the most expensive guitar I ever bought. It was $950. With the case, brand new guitar, handmade.
Sure.
And I had to borrow the money and pay it off. Gee, now it's a bit of a blur. What the oldest would be, but I still have, I got a Gibson lap steel from a family friend when I was 13. It belonged to her father. It was in storage. The VR9 has the screaming P90, tortoiseshell P90. I don't know if it was made in the late 40s. I'm not sure the actual date. The lap steel I've played ever since I was a teenager. I used to just make noise on it. I'd detune it, put echo flex on it, buzz, just freak out on it. Now I actually, of course, since the Geraldine Fibber specialist started playing it, I make a lap steel. So.
Oh, not like, you know, in the middle of for your pleasure?
Exactly. Right. And so that went along. And after that, I didn't really acquire any guitars for a really long time. I played some Strats, because I was in the band Block. It's all about Strats.
Right. But you don't have any of those.
No, I had to sell all the Strats, and I never really related to the Strat, the first feel of it. And then that was in the late 80s when I decided to get a Jaguar. And I got it out of the recycler for $300, 66 Jaguar. That was the beginning of the whole, you know, Jazzmaster Jaguar era for me, where I played with the strings behind the bridge and love the body shape. Jaguar, of course, is a little thinner sounding than the Jazzmaster. I didn't get the Jazzmaster until I bought that one from you in 95.
Oh, yeah.
My main guitar.
This one Jay passed on.
Yeah, I like it. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
It's beautiful. I didn't know when I got it from you that it was as good of a Jazzmaster as it is. Then the Fibbers, you know, we used to just like throw guitars around.
Yeah, sure.
Toss the guitar to Kevin and he'd rip the strings out and, you know, bleed all over it. And that thing, just playing with you, got chewed. I realized for the first 2 weeks of tour with you that I still had my keys on my belt.
Yeah, right.
The keys were flapping as I ripped, taking all the paint off the back of the guitar. It's pretty hilarious.
But right away, you knew about changing the bridge to Stain.
Right, well, that was something that Rick King at Guitar Maniacs told me about it. That guitar came
Tacoma.
Yeah, Tacoma. That guitar came from there, he told me.
Right, I did.
And I bought another one from him that I just had to sell.
Was that the turquoise?
Yeah, it's gone. Seafoam. In fact, a friend of mine has it. It was a refit.
I think that's the next guitar you get after.
That's true. And
you know what? It wasn't as good as that other one, huh?
Oh, God. It's not even... Because also it has the binding on the neck.
That's right, that's right.
The feel of it, the shape of the neck, everything's totally different. It doesn't have the slapboard, fingerboard. It doesn't have the same tones. But it did have a beautiful tone for some of that contemplating instrument stuff.
Yeah.
No one says old man, the old man, that one.
Yeah.
That's done on that guitar. It had a beautiful behind the bridge G. It's a no G behind the bridge, just ring. Like a buoy or something. That's what I thought when I was recording it on the record. It sounded kind of nautical.
Yeah.
A little bell-like sound. It was a nice clean guitar. Oh, there's Coltrane. There goes the lead.
Where were we?
The foam.
Seafoam green?
Yeah.
It got like, sold.
And that for a while, yeah, it got sold. My friend Noah Phillips has it.
But you knew that same kind of guitar could be different.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't know how good that 59 was until I started playing other Jazzmasters. I realized they had this much beefier sound, deeper tone, not as trembly, not as glassy, which are the qualities that are not really, they don't work so well for me. That glassiness. I think it works really well for somebody like Jay. His Jazzmasters are maybe those kind of Jazzmasters that have really more edge to the sound with all the marshals and distortions really articulated. For me, it's a little too tinny.
Did you hear the news? He's got a Fender's making a Jay Maskus Jazzmaster.
Oh, really?
Comes out purple this year. Yeah, of course. But I wonder if they'll get those sounds.
I don't know. I don't even know if he likes those kind. But when I used to play those, they were much more glassy sounding. I used to think of more of him than even of Thurston.
Well, he turned down the one you liked, maybe because it wasn't as
beefy, too low end.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I love about it. So I started realizing, oh my God, this guitar is great. So it became my number one guitar. As soon as I was playing it all the time, nothing else felt right
he's had things. I mean, you changed the bridge right away, but you've done other things.
Well, like nothing really except that you
select the switches, right?
Keep breaking the switches, and the machine has had to be swapped out.
Yeah, right.
But other than that, you know, the knobs and pickups and what's left of the pick guard and the finisher. Original. And I remember when I got it from you, that somebody had...
It was an original finish. Yeah.
These machine heads.
It actually cracked up the headstock.
It's the original finish, but I...
Oh, it is?
They cracked the headstock. Yeah, I looked it up. They made that finish.
Oh, wow.
So when the paint starts coming off, it looks like an eggplant.
Yeah.
It looks purple.
Yeah.
Which it really is. It's an eggplant color. It's not just black, black.
Okay.
It's pretty cool if you think about it. But anyway, so after that, it's kind of a blur as far as acquiring guitars. Because I really didn't get any guitars for a really long time. I think the next up was Jerry Jones guitars.
Yeah, right.
I got to play with
an instrument
and contemplate
it. It's like breaking the chokehold.
Right, I got the baritone guitar first, and then the 12-string. My friend Gene Stinson turned me on to these guitars. I realized that...
What's the 12-string, the puppet head?
No, that's my Fender 12 that Lynn Johnston gave me. I came
Jerry,
later.
Yeah, Mitch, oh, that's later.
Yeah, yeah. Jerry
Johnson. That's right, Lynn Johnston.
I played that thing, but he kind of lent it to me. It was really mine. I used to just say to him all the time when I saw it, it was mad. He showed it to me, pulled it out under the bed, dust all over it, all over the case. So I used to always ask him, what's going on with that 12-string, Lynn?
Oh, it's still under there, you know.
So anyway, I got the Jerry Jones baritone guitar because I didn't play GE's. And then GE got a 12-string, one of the first Jerry Jones 12-strings, which he still thinks is one of his favorite guitars he's ever played in his life. So I played it and realized how, after the Rickenbacker, the Fender 12, how easy it was to play and how good it sounded with those lipstick case pickups. So the Fibbers went on the road for Butch. I acquired one for the tour because I played the Fender 12 and lent me on Butch.
And then it played so good.
No, it was like playing telephone cables. I got it worked on later by Paul Flynn. Through Tone, and it plays really well now, but it needed some love and care.
Right.
Eventually, Lynn gave me the 12-string, which just blew my mind. He said, I'll never sell it. You should have it. It's yours. So I came back from the Fibbers tour one time. So that became mine around 98, 97. And I really only record with it if I want to play in LA with it for a while. This is really beautiful, and it's valuable. It has custom red. Candy apple red.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen it. It's beautiful.
Man.
I think it was under your bed. In a case.
Now everything's in the closet. But, so the 12-string and 59 began. I acquired a Hagstrom, too.
Oh, right.
During the February days. $100. And used it as an open tuning guitar. The Fibbers, I played open G. I already had it. I didn't know Carla played Hagstroms. So when we met, we both had Hagstroms. We were kind of into that. She plays Hagstrom 1, classic.
You know, also some Hagstroms.
Well, Pat.
Yeah, that's weird.
But he doesn't play Hagstrom 1 or 2. He really likes the sort of the weird 3 pickup 1.
Yeah.
And the 3-5
1.
He does sweet. Never saw him play.
I had a sweet bass.
Larry Coryell.
Yeah.
Played a sweet. So that was kind of my main bunch of guitars for a long time because I never had money to buy them.
Right.
So that sort of kept me going until really the last 3 years when I started kind of getting another couple of lap steals, trying different tunings. And then I started getting inexpensive guitars, like I have a Harmony that looks kind of Jazzmaster shaped and has those really nice Garmin pickups in it. That I got at the music store in Berkeley that used to be the Univibe.
Yeah.
I got it for $150. And I really like that guitar. I have it at home for open tuning. I just try different tunings sometimes with less expensive guitars and take them out to play solo gigs. Or if I play duo with somebody like GE, it's really fun to have these open tunings.
Yeah.
And like you said, maybe I barely ever fret the guitar. I'm just kind of hitting the back of the neck of my palm and looping things.
No, but one of the tricky things we've first seen yet is you doing the Sonic Youth open tunings by not doing open tuning by finger.
Oh, yeah, a little used to work. Yeah, you stretch your fingers out. It's never going to be as low. I have to tune it down to get those low C's.
Yeah.
Low D's. But when I started. started playing with Wilco was when I started getting a lot more guitars. Of course, not only was I making some dough for the first time and getting out of debt, but also I needed some different things to work with them. Jeff Tweedy gave me one of those that they call it faded or whatever, Les Paul Junior kind of Joan Jett style for the two P90s. I play open G, slide on that, Wilco. Then I needed
like Johnny Thunder.
Yeah. Then I needed to get
TVs. Did you call those TVs?
No, I don't know. But those are good guitars and inexpensive. But Jeff Davis,
I heard somewhere, is it double kind of way?
Yeah.
Because like Leslie West said, he liked the single ones because he stayed in tune easy. There's something about the neck being all naked like that thing.
Well, Jeff Tweedy has a black, whatever they call faded Les Paul single cutaway. It's a cheap series. He loves it. He put a Bigsby on it.
They don't have a top. They're flat.
Yeah. It's just wood. It's a stain.
Right.
He plays that guitar on Alice Crow, a couple other Wilco songs. It's nice.
But, so he gave you one of them?
Gave me one of those.
What is it, 50s?
No, they're just like made in the 90s. You know?
Oh, they were reissued.
They were like made, yeah, okay. I think it cost Wilco $200. New.
Yeah.
And it's good. It sounds great. It plays great. I needed to get another Jazzmaster as a backup. Wilco, so I got a Japanese one on eBay, and then Frankie Montoro took all the paint off, ground it off. He just stained it, put that anodized aluminum pick guard on it, got the Seymour Duncan antiquity pickups, which are really good, and the Japanese Jazzmasters have the wrong pots, so you put the 1 meg pots in, all of a sudden more sound, not as thin,
louder.
And with those pickups, ended up with a really good guitar, except for the hardware, which I've still never quite got the good hardware for that guitar. '60s hardware is the only hardware that works.
Yeah.
The Japanese hardware from those 80s ones are totally horrible. And the all parts stuff, I'm sorry, crap. It just starts getting wonky.
Even the same bridges?
Bridges are okay, but I wear them out. They're not high quality metal.
No, but
no, and I stench everything out. Not as bad as D-Boom, but some major excavation.
Gross.
Going through and removing those bridge pieces after a couple of tours.
The barrel.
Solid rust goo under there. So I got this little, what we call the Frankenstein, for use with Wilco, and then things started to step up pretty.
Well, we should talk about the bridges. There's a problem with the original, the threads.
Well, if you play hard,
they're going to leak.
Strings move around. Yeah. Some people seem to be able to make them work. I can't do it.
Jay went for like a Gibson Tune-O-Matic.
You do the Tune-O-Matic too. It's just
they're like little blades. I think the big barrels keep the string breakage down.
Yeah, they do.
They spread it out a little more.
They don't hold the string as securely. And also, you know, it's kind of good the way that Tune-O-Matic has such a smaller amount of metal actually touching the string.
Yeah.
Leading to believe that the strings resonate more.
Oh.
You know, with the Tune-O-Matic.
Yeah.
But you have to swap out the whole seating.
I know. I've seen them do it.
It just goes right on. But anyway, now, guys.
I bet you this J1 has
that bridge.
Yeah.
Tune-O-Matic. I played this.
You would think the spacing would be a little different too, right? Because of Gibson versus a Fender.
Like it'd be more closer together.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is. Somebody told me you could just change the seating, it should work. I have to shim the two E strings on the Mustang bridge, but the radius on the Mustang is completely different from a Jazzmaster, which is totally different from a Jaguar. The Jaguar's closer, so I have to raise up the two E strings so they're not in this curve
that
the guitar doesn't have. So then with Wilco, I was using those.
Do you like a flatter deck? Bigger radius.
Yeah, I like an extra string length. I don't mind the neck's kind of large, so my hands and my fingers are long. I like string tension, so I like longer scale. It's fun.
No, but I'm talking about the curve, the radius.
I don't even know if I care.
Or flat. Because the modern thing is to get bigger radius, more and more flat neck.
Right. I don't know if I ever really had a preference. I always just... The first guy that ever worked on my guitars was a man named Bobby Carlos. And he guitars that were completely messed up. And all the strings were different heights and widths. Intonation was completely off. I used to just try to intonate it myself, and the strings would just get all straight. But I started getting smarter after that. One of the first things I did with Wilco was buy another Jerry Jones 12-string. Because I knew that I was going to want to play a fair amount of 12-string with them.
Yeah.
The offset Jeff style and sound. And it's worked out really well with the 12-string. So I got a Neptune, his later model 12-string, which is a total thing of beauty. It plays like butter.
Butter.
Sounds great. It looks great. It's a beautiful thing.
So now you got four 12-strings.
Yeah, including the Rickenbacker that's unplayable. And then, well, five if you count the acoustic and the Taylor.
Oh, that's right.
I'm a 12-string fiend. I love those 12-strings.
Yeah.
And then I got a... what else did I get for Wilco? Oh, I bought a National Steel. Two National Steels.
That Taylor, do you tune it me?
Yeah.
Or to Z?
No, I don't feel the lower thing. It's a good question. A lot
so
of
to help the neck stay?
It seems to be fine. It's been an E its whole life. Although, I'd love to take it in and have somebody look at it, see how it's doing.
Okay.
I played it also on some overdubs on the new...
Because I see you using a capo a lot.
No, I'm not a capo.
Yeah.
I used to have a couple of songs that I played with Eric Von Essen on Q-Ad.
Yeah.
Phase, and also one song, Block, where I capoed up really high. And that would sort of emulate the sound of maybe a charango or a quattro or something.
Yeah,
high,
yeah, yeah.
A higher pitch in the song. Played finger style. That was something I don't do. I did it then, but I don't do much anymore.
So after the Neptune,
well, I guess the two National Labs.
The Neptune got lipsticks.
Yep, all the Jerry Jones stuff. Sounds so good. And so I got this little National Lab steel on eBay. It was great because I was in Chicago, and it turned out to be in Indiana. So about an hour and a half away. So Glenn Cochi drove me over there and I just picked it up. It's the National New Yorker looks kind of like an Art Deco skyscraper. Bakelite, black and white light. Bakelite, it looks incredibly cool. And I got it pretty cheap.
It's the old.
Yeah, it's old. It doesn't even use quarter inch jack cable. With the screw on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's your total drag. Yeah, it is. It's short scale, but it sounds really... The thing that's nice about the Nationals compared to the Gibson that I have to say, they have very quiet pickups, kind of humbucking style. So no hum. I can use a compressor with a clean sound and do sort of my more fake metal steel stuff with those guitars because I can compress it to get all that sustain and no hum. So it's real nice. And I bought another National that was freestanding. It's got three legs.
Yeah, sure.
In Toronto, welcome to it. And it looks also super amazing. It looks kind of like a rocket ship. And I tried it freestanding for a while, but then I felt like I was in a cockpit. Like I was separate from everybody.
Yeah.
I was turning into Steve Howe. So I played on my lap, but it's easier anyway. One of the only hard things about playing with Wilco is when I'm switching back and forth between lap steel and regular guitars. I have to do it really fast. I have my little stool, and I have to throw the guitars in the guitar stand with the stool up, plug everything in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As fast as I possibly can. And hope everything's in tune.
Well, if you move to the pedal thing like you want to do, you're going to have to stool it up.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm afraid to go pedal steel, but somebody like Greg Leach plays both lap steel and pedal steel with equal ease. Lap steel, obviously, there's more with doing with the bar.
Yeah.
Moving the bar around, that suits me because it's more like regular guitar playing.
Right.
I also don't do the finger picks. I can't get used to it, so I hold the pick and do my stupid, fake finger style.
Kodo.
Yeah. It's supposed to do all that, do all the damping.
Yeah.
If I do the pedal steel, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to have to do it all, because there's hardly anything in terms of moving the bar unless you get some of that really super souped up Nashville skip-a-dip all over the... You know what I mean? That really...
Sure.
So, everything else is done with levers, the knee levers, the foot pedal,
yeah.
And damping. So so it's like quite a dance. It's very, you have to have a lot of four-way coordination. But maybe I'll confront it. But then again, now I'll have the cockpit, and I'll be all messed up. So I figure out where to put it. So I've already got 7 guitars on stage, and I just maintain my own little area.
So
Jeff has his stuff carrying by the guitars head.
Because he's standing in the middle.
He's standing in the middle because he switches guitars like almost every song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's fetishistic about his guitars. He likes to play specific guitar for specific songs. So he carries like 19 guitars up there.
And that theaters, they're probably all these oldies.
Oh man, they go, this last year, Wilco got the guitar vault, which I never even heard of, but I realized I had seen before on these really big gigs like the Stones have them. Just guitars are all inside stands with all this deluxe padding around it, lashed in, huge doors. You just open those things up, turn the light on inside, and there are the guitars. So you have 2 of these vaults.
Which is each one hold?
And it looks like about 10 or 12 guitars. Completely full. And I've got mine in there too, except that when I'm on stage, they're all on stage. Jeff's are all backstage. It's a lot of guitars.
And you get some more recent ones in the slides that are just...
Oh God, this year, last year, 2006 was a banner year for guitar acquisition. Yeah, well... Before this year's big explosion of guitars, I picked up some kind of oddball guitars, like an old 60s, mid-60s Echo, Italian plastic guitar, which I bought from Frankie Montoro, because he bought it and realized maybe it was something I would like, and he didn't need it. And it's got the no-tone setting that I was looking for, which you find on some of those Morricone Spaghetti Western scores.
Sure, sure.
It's got that amazing attack. No sustain. And it looks, of course, completely cool. I played Jeff Tweedy's. He has one with 4 pickups. It's this totally bizarre shape. It's hanging on the wall and he never plays. So I started using it on this one thing we did in a log cabin in Indiana. We were kind of out there in the woods. And I thought, well, we're going to be doing some experimenting. They're filming it. The guitar looks great. I said, I'll just play Jeff's Echo guitar off the wall. He doesn't want. So then I started thinking, well, ooh, hey, maybe I should get an Echo. I like these no-tone settings. I thought it would be good also for kind of fake, really old-school country picking sounds. So it's all percussive with no sustain.
Yeah. Analog.
Yeah, exactly. So I got that, and I also got one of Jeff Tweedy's guitars he was selling, an old Birds of London split sound, because it has some of the most bizarre tones.
Birds of London.
Burns, yeah, you know, like Burns. Brian May guitars and Burns. Yeah. And it's got split pickups, split sound pickups, where you can have a totally different tone on the E, A, and B string, and then a high-end tone on the high strings. But the low tone, the mellow tone, is way louder than the treble tone. So you can't really ever combine them.
Yeah.
But it has this setting on it called Wild Dog. It's one of the pickup settings. It's completely nasal, high-endy, twangy sound, which I also thought would be really cool for sort of country-style guitars with lighter gauge strings. And I bought a Jerry Jones Neptune on eBay.
Another one.
A 6-string.
Oh, 6-string.
Let's see if I can get a Telecaster kind of thing going on it. 3 lipstick case pickups, lighter gauge strings, more. I'm trying to do more of my Clarence White kind of stuff on that.
You don't have a Tele.
No, it's so funny because Jeff keeps saying, no, conditional. That kind of sound. Be on a Tele. Yes, I know. Not doing it. Pat Sansone and Wilco's a Tele guy. Jeff plays the Tele. I'm not going to Tele. At least not. I'm putting it off. I like them. They're cool.
You've played them before.
Yeah. I never owned one. But I always kind of cherish that certain jazz guys played them, like Ed Bicker, the Toronto chord wizard guitarist, Tele, Sam Brown, the late Sam Brown.
Jay's got one. It's like a blue metal flake.
Who?
Jay Mask.
Oh, Jay.
But I think a blue flake is from drum skin that he did
there.
the black electrician's tape. It looks good, like my pop's first car. He said, yeah, from 50, because he painted it with a barn brush red. He said, from 50 yards, that thing looked great.
Right, and he walked it closer.
But the brush strokes the sides of your
fingers. Takes also a little of the shine off the car, right? Wait a sec, it's texture. Have to have a maple then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's totally different and it has that glassy, cool.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, maybe someday. We were talking earlier about Henry Kaiser's guitar.
Yes.
He's got that girl Kelly shaped guitar. Those are great. They're really expensive, though. Maybe I get one of those so it doesn't look like a Fender. It just has the shape. And it's got aluminum or so whatever that is binding.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Very, very strange. They really are good. Very loud. Anyway.
So the Jerry Jones 6.
Now you're taxing my tiny brain. Well, I bought for the bus. I didn't have an acoustic guitar in Chicago that I could just knock around and write on and practice on. Jeff Tweedy suggested I check out these Jatan Macaferri style guitars because we were talking about Django Reinhardt. He said, well, you know, those Jatan ones are really inexpensive and they seem really good. You should try one out. So he and I went over to this store in Chicago and check these out, and man, the one with the extra string length and the small hole instead of the big oval, the small hole, is just such an incredible guitar. And I showed it to Frankie Montoro, the dude here and former guitar tech for Wilco. He couldn't believe the quality. He bought one. So it's this Django Reinhardt type guitar. It's great. It's, you know, $700. It's cool. They're built under tension. Amazing workmanship. They're probably made by, you know, slave girls from some Chinese village or political prisoners in China. They don't say made in China anywhere on it, but I'm pretty sure that's where they're made. If you look it up, it says it's made in the Far East. So you think maybe it could be Indonesia too, but it doesn't say. So somewhere where labor is very cheap, because wow, for the money, it's a great guitar. And things got out of control. Then I started buying Jazzmasters.
Yeah.
Still for Wilco, you know.
How many?
I bought this white one that I've been playing.
Yeah, right.
And that's not even a real Fender. It's like a mystery body with a 60s hardware and Seymour Duncan antiquity pickups on it. I bought a True Tone. The neck was supposed to be a Fender Custom Shop neck. I think that could have been bogus. I had to have it reshaped. It had this really weird eel shape. And Frankie just got out his micrometer and measured my 59 I bought from you. It made exactly the same shape. I didn't have the varnish taken off the back because I don't like the varnish. Just a little Danish oil and it's good to go. So that's a really good guitar. Surprisingly good. Really solid. Some of the ones I've gotten since then just aren't as solid. I play them, and even with the Mustang Bridge, the strings move all over the place.
Yeah.
They don't have that tight feeling. Even with the fairly heavy bass strings.
What were they like? The 60s?
No, they were still, one of them was a Bill Nash. I still have it. It's a Bill Nash. It's not even a Fender. Just he made his own version of an early 60s Jazzmaster. You know, made it relic it so it looks like it's already been beat up or whatever. The reason I picked it up is because Jeff Tweedy has one of these Telecaster. It's not a Fender, it's a Bill Nash.
Yeah.
I love that guitar. It sounds incredible. It's got a Rosewood fingerboard. The guitar he plays on the song Kingpin. Man, oh man, is it a good telly. But frankly, Bill didn't quite get it right. You know, I got it online from Metal Geeks or one of those places. And MetalGeeks.com or MusicToys.com, that's what it is. And it sounds really good. It actually got a really full sound. It's got the same Duncan antiquity pickups in it. It's red. But something's lacking. And then low E string just will not stay put.
so I'm still working on that. And the Frankenstein now, with the 60s hardware, the hardware's completely collapsing. Certainly, so now if I use the tremolo bar for even 15 seconds, it just, like, collapses. So we're trying to find some 60s hardware online, both guitars.
Yeah.
And man, oh man, this stuff's gotten really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
You can find it like $250, $300. Yeah, I really blew it. I should have been acquiring this stuff years ago.
Yeah, right.
But I've never been smart with it. You know, my
like
motto.
Jazz masters at all, I remember.
My motto is always buy high, sell low. But, so I've got, but then something really unexpected happened, which was I was with Frankie and his buddy of his from California named Zane. We were having some breakfast over at this place right near Chicago Music Exchange called Wishbone. And we told Zane, he's like, man, you have to see this music store. It's like the most expensive, overly well-stocked vintage store you'll ever see. Since it moved into this, what looks like to be an auto showroom space, they have chandeliers and more guitars, vintage guitars, and quality that you've never seen in one place, but also really expensive. I walked in and there was this Jazzmaster hanging there with walnut stain on it. The thick guard looked like it was already starting to shrink. It looked completely unglamorous. It looked like it had slapboard fingerboard, and it turned out to be, well, they told me it was a 1960. The neck angle on it was completely wrong. It needed a reprint. At this point, late 50s Jazzmasters have been going for upwards of $7,000. And that market has come down now since this. But anyway, I ended up getting the guitar knowing I was going to have to do $500 of work for Frankie for $2,600. And that is the most expensive guitar ever that I bought. But it turns out he finished it by just putting black stain on it, put the black anodized pickguard on it, refretted it, changed the neck angle. Phenomenal.
What are the covers?
Black? No, they're just cream color.
Okay.
Same old look. It looks really cool now. And I haven't seen any, I think I played it live except in Chicago. You know, the idea for me of picking out 259s on road seats is really, really crazy.
Maybe 59 was a good year if you got two of them.
The slapboard, a lot of people say that the slapboard fingerboard, the way it's layered, the way it's on there, it has a lot to do with the deeper tone.
Okay.
And I'm inclined to agree. As opposed to the early ones, maybe the pickups are a little more fabulous, and that slapboard, the wood, maybe it's alder, I can't remember what they're making it out. Really great. So. Now I have two pickups. It turned out to be a 59. Frankie looked up the serial number, and it was a 59. It wasn't a 60, like they told me. So that was kind of the craziest thing. I literally was leaving to come home that day, and I just plunked down the plastic and closed my eyes. And then I left in Frankie's car, and I said, if you get a chance,
Will,
have at it, and I'll be back in about a month. Came back and used it on the Wilco record.
Yeah.
And since then, even more?
God. Yeah. So, I bought a K-Thin Twin, which is a pretty great guitar, in Arlington, Virginia. It needs a neck set, but it's, I'm really into these guitars now for recording. The certain tones that have really low output kind of pickups, lo-fi, silver tones. I bought a silver tone jazz box. It's not really a jazz box. It's kind of more like some people see it, they think it's more of a rockabilly guitar. Eddie Cochran could have played it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's something about those low output pickups. You play it a little amp, so it's not driving the amp too hard, like a 10-watt amp. Great for playing finger style or blues or slide. It has this kind of glassy, good articulated sound. So I got those two guitars. It's kind of about it.
No, what about this jazz?
Well, I was working up to that.
Okay.
Until the Howard Roberts.
Yeah.
Howard Roberts of last week. Oh, and I got an Angstrom Galaxy. last month. Completely psychedelic. It's got knobs all over it. Bizarre tones. You see these pickups are rewound by Lindy Braylon, apparently, the Meister of pickup rewinding. Guitar is screamed.
What year do you think it was from?
I'm thinking late 60s, because the mid 60s they had this much cooler inlays on the fingerboard. Fret markers. This just has dots. I don't know why they decided to make it look more conservative, because it already looks crazy.
Yeah.
It's got really good working tremolo and these weird roller tone knobs. There's no regular volume or tone knob.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all super dedicated for three pickups. Each pickup has its own set of stuff, and it has a baritone switch, and it has undertone, treble, bass, and discant. Somebody looked up discant and told me it's some kind of treble designation, but it's really mid. It's a mid-range switch. So I got that, and the 77 Howard Roberts, which was absolutely crazy, because my cash flow right now is negative. I'm not working that much. But what the heck? I'll pay it off later in the year.
Yeah, what was the story?
Guitar designed originally for Epiphone by Howard Roberts. It has a jazz guitar, single fretaway, fully fat hollow body.
Yeah.
But instead of having F holes, it has an oval sound hole, more like the old Gibson acoustics in the 20s and 30s with the arch top.
Sure.
The L1s. And it has a one humbucking coming off the neck that's actually coming off the fingerboard, so
yeah,
not attached to the guitar. And the Epiphone had a spruce top. In the late 60s, then it disappeared for a while. He redesigned it. Came out to Gibson Maple, which doesn't feed back as much.
Okay.
So that's, and also, it has, I think, kind of closed pickup area a little bit, something to keep it from just taking off. I'm never going to play it loud anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know those guitars, especially this one, so set up with flat wounds, like real jazz guys play.
Yeah.
It's like having a little piano. 77.
77.
Yeah. And now I'm going to have to play some jazz, man.
And how much did you play?
That's private information.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't so bad.
Enough.
Enough. Enough to shock the hell out of me.
You were telling me you had somebody look at it, and you were hoping they'd talk you out of it.
Oh, yeah, my friend Paul, he's a pedal meister. He built my pedal board on East Wilco. Works sometimes at True Tone. That's how I met him. This is where this guitar was. Again, I have to stop going in there, obviously. And he said they played it and I had to buy it. So he didn't help me at all. It's like, dude, you have to get this guitar. So, man, what are you doing to me? But I already made a whole record on it anyway. This is before I bought it, they lent it to me. We had an extra hour of the singer session, so we did 45 minutes of free improvised. Jazz inspired, quite some fancy.
So you only had a week, but you got to record with it.
Yeah, I've got a whole record of it. Played it through this little solid state amp called Ultrasound. It's kind of like a polytone.
That was the old days, right?
Yep.
From the Fusion guys.
Polytone was the jazz guy, and it was designed by an accordion to be clean, solid state,
right,
but really dull. Kind of bass, kind of dull, so you don't have to get rid of 100 pounds of treble like jazz guys are constantly trying to do. So this ultrasound sounds kind of like that, but a little bit more acoustic, more full range. And this instant Jim Hall 1961 tone completely freaked me out. So I play completely different.
That was your amp that you just bought, or?
No, I got it. I bought it.
Oh!
It's little, it doesn't cost much. It's like 30 watts. Not even the size of it. It's a little wider than a Fender Pro Junior, but not as tall.
Yeah.
It's a speaker with a little tweeter hanging in front of it, like a woofer.
trouble with the tweeter.
Not a lot.
But can you attenuate the tweeter?
You can attenuate.
Yeah,
it's
like
a full
lot of bass things, my bass cap. So
there's a lot of stuff you can do with the sound.
I usually kind of turn mine down.
So basically, I become a jazz fogey.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, all my protestations about the jazz police are going to become a member of the jazz police. No more effects pedals, no more jazz masters, no more fuzz bosses.
You're never going to get an SG.
Giving it all up. Oh, I love SGs. But no, probably not.
You played one?
No, I never owned one. Jeff Tweedy has like four of them.
You played his.
Yeah, wow, they're so great. So disorienting. So easy to play up high. It's like
Aren't they easy to play?
It's like playing a Firebird. All of a sudden, the 12th fret feels like it's the 5th fret.
Yeah.
It's really strange. I love Firebird.
Just sticks the neck out there.
So since Steve Stills Firebird, I always wanted to get a Firebird. Well, I hear they have some neck problems because of the upside down headstock. So the low string's pulling the rods in the wrong spot in the neck.
What about a bass? You ever going to get a bass?
I have a Moa. Actually, I forgot. I own a Bass 6.
I bought
a reissue of a Japanese one. It's really good. I bought it
from
my old roommate, Bob. He sold it to me.
The Whammy Bar.
Right around the time of, I think it was around some Contemplating Engine Room time, a little after.
Uh-huh.
It's got the Whammy Bar, so I usually use that for bass. If I roll the tone off, you can't really tell it's a bass 6. It's all like dub. You know, rumbly dub. You can't tell.
The strings are close. Real lame as you can tell.
So now I can play all those pure pornography riffs with the flanger. I love that. Yeah, so that's my only bass.
Okay.
If I had a bass, I don't know, I'd probably want to get something that now is completely unaffordable. You'd have to win the lottery to get it, like a 60s jazz bass.
Oh, yeah, please, yeah. Early 60s.
I love the jazz bass net.
The stack,
Right.
Here's a Fender I'm thinking of. What about a mandolin? The electric mandolin.
I always wanted those when I heard John Abercrombie.
Not double string, right?
Yeah.
There's four strings.
John Abercrombie played it a lot in the 70s. And they're really scarce. They're actually pretty easy to find out if you have things like eBay. But I don't think I'll be. Well, I actually have a Jerry Jones Neptune Shorty 12 string that I forgot to mention. That I got a couple of years ago. It's an octave higher 12 string.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of mandolin like, but not.
Not fits.
No. And it's got octave things instead of just double chorus or no double chorus.
So they're octave like a 12.
Yeah, mostly, yeah. But only
except for the B and the E.
And the G. On the Shorty. I don't think they could get the short string, but that'd be so skinny to get that high octave. It'd be like a higher than an auto harp or something. But anyway, that's the chorus. It's Jerry. It's beautiful. But no mandolins. I like the guitar lid. Someday maybe I'll get a Jerry Jones guitar lid. Play in the mandolin register, but also a guitar register. It's a little hard to play up there. The frets are still the same width. You know? But man, those lipstick case pickups.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. I think that's it.
You know, you got a lot of pedals. We did a banjo gig last night.
Yeah.
Why don't you just talk about the ones you use? Because those are the ones you usually use with banjo, right?
Yeah, there's only one pedal that I didn't bring on this gig that I always use, which is my Marshall Governor distortion box from the 60s.
Yeah.
And it might be early 70s. But that thing is, the input jacks are so iffy that they come out really easily.
They're
surrounded by decomposing plastic. So I kind of took a chance and brought my Q-Sec Screamer Fuzz instead, which I would love with. But it's not, you know, it's not the same. So I brought the Screamer Fuzz last night.
All right.
And my Klon Centaur, of course, she goes everywhere with me, just about, for overdrive. And my Fuzz Factory, my CVX Fuzz Factory, which is a crucial banyan ingredient. And I always use it anyway. But it has
shifter for Banyan, my old boss bass shifter, and Wawa, whammy pedal, volume pedal, 60-second digital delay, reverb, and I brought the Pitch Pirate, the mid-5 Pitch Pirate last night to try to get this sound. I really like it. It sounds like a cassette with a ding in the tape. Like that. And if you could do heavy modulation fast, it sounds kind of like analog synthesizer sound. So I tried that at one point.
Failed miserably.
I think I did it on Agate Brain.
Yeah, yeah.
When all other roads have been exhausted. So that was it.
Your volume.
No, I said volume.
Oh, okay.
Volume's always there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of my ultimate crutch besides the system second. And whammy pedal. Well, I have those things as anything that overdrives or distorts. I can usually get through any kind of musical situation.
Kind of tuner.
Those Boss Power things that power my
gear pedals. It doubles up as
yeah,
a tuner.
It's genius. Whoever came up with that thing. Kudos. The Zaz. Hugs. Genius device.
Oh, the battery game. What a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Well, of course, that's the other thing about the Quan Sensor and the Marshall, they don't take that.
Oh, yeah. Plug.
So,
attempt to use a converter plug?
I can try to do it, but I found that the Quan sounds a little better with the battery anyway.
Oh.
Governor, I could.
What's that other fuzz that you used to use with this?
Who's the big
Centaur?
One? Oh, that's the overdrive. I use it always. I had it last night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I use a smaller pedal when I'm going to Europe or something to fit in my case.
Yeah, yeah.
That I just acquired called Love Pedal. The Love Pedal Infinity. It's a little mushier than the Quan, but very comparable. Sometimes I use my Tremulator. Tremolo. But I can't have all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Without a board. I just have to sit there like
a Wilco use a board.
Right. It's a beautiful thing. But I don't even set up my own stuff in Wilco anyway. So it's so bizarre. Walk on stage.
Yeah, right.
Sound check. Everything's good to go. It's really amazing.
You're talking this morning about amps. Last night you used
Oliver.
Oliver threw a PV.
PV cabinet.
Right.
PVM inside the cabinet was just
open back.
I wanted to get an open back 112.
Yeah.
So I picked that up years ago at Unibod.
Right.
Berkeley for $100. Blew the speaker immediately. It was a PV. Then I put a Marshall Celestian reissue in there. Blew that. Had to do the EV. You know, I do these things with a lot of low end on the whammy pedal.
Yeah.
Crank the distortion so it sounds like the end of the world. That usually kind of fries all the guitar speaker pretty rapidly. That and the mid-5 glitch computer, which basically makes the sound of explosions. It has, like all these pedals, massive gain. But with Wilco, I used Jeff Tweedy's old Marshall JTM-45 reissue. The offset head, 412s.
Yeah.
Well, you can get used to playing 412s real easily.
Well, you were talking about that.
That would be great for Banyan to have a. I mean, I'd have to wear headphones over my earplugs, but a 100 watt head with a 1412 cabinet, like Marshall style, high watt cabinet.
Sure.
That would be beautiful. But then I can compete with you guys, volume wise. I know I'm not playing loud enough for what's going on, but I
love it when you're loud.
I can't really justify buying an amp that heavy because it's only for Banyan gear.
You play every gig I do with Banyan. I always go up to the sound man and plead with him to make sure you're loud in the PA.
My motto about amps for recording, little amps for a gig. Little tiny, I use little tiny old Magnetone panoramic. Silvertone, little Fender Pro Juniors. They sound so good.
You ever try a little Supro?
Oh, that's the Jeff Tweedy thing. Jimmy Page. Beautiful. They sound great for overdrive. So, you know, for me, playing a clean thing, I can record with my all
singers for Wilco and for certain sounds and overdubbing. Just the little tiny amps sound like huge. That's it.
January 18, 2007. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. And here's part three of Jack Flanders and the Ghost Islands.
There are places that are blessed. And then when outsiders hear about it and come pouring in, it goes away. It's gone. Sometimes it's as simple as, say you see nice little woods and you think, man, this is pretty and peaceful and magical. I think I can find happiness here. So you bulldoze out a bunch of trees and you build a house. But you're not getting through enough light. So you bulldoze out some more trees. And now the woods are gone. The magic's gone and there you are, still looking for peace and happiness. Crazy world.
Oh yeah, man.
I was at the Pelican's Pouch talking to Joseph. There's a patio out in the back. I noticed a little shrine made out of lots of different seashells. Now, you know, Joseph, I saw your offerings out there. Are you feeding Aloha?
Not Aloha.
It looks like an offering.
Yes, it is for the ones who you do not see.
Are they gods?
No more gods than you are me. Are you a god, man?
I wish I were.
I help your wish come true. Here is my offering. A free beer.
I always figured some of those guys were freeloaders. Thanks.
No problem.
Do you have a name for them?
They are like us, and they are not like us.
But do you have a name for them?
Lakan Una. Those that bless us.
Those that bless us? Interesting.
That little shrine set out on the patio. It was old, but it wasn't weathered. I think Joseph puts it out there when the islands come to visit.
Did you ask him?
I don't feel he wanted to say anything more.
Well, what were the offerings?
Some fried chicken, and rice, and lettuce, and flowers.
No teeth marks on the chicken?
I was tempted to leave some.
But if the gods never eat it, isn't that a waste of good food?
Not really.
Do they give it to the poor? It's the poor people who make offerings, is it not?
Well, in Bali, they make these incredibly elaborate offerings. Fruit stacked in pyramids, on platters balanced on the heads of Balinese women. It's quite a sight to see.
And what happens to the fruit? They put it on the shrine and it rots?
That's not what happens.
They leave it there while they do their chants and prayers, and then they take it back home.
They steal it back?
No. When it's sitting there, the gods feed on the essence of the offering.
So everyone gets to eat.
Ah, now that is sensible recycling.
Oh, yeah. Celestial recycling has been around for a long time.
Bunny reappeared from wherever she had been, and she and Dominique went off to spend a night on the town. It was still early evening when Dominique joined us in the cafe. She came in all excited.
We saw one.
One what?
One of them.
Are you certain?
I was with Bunny. She saw it first.
When?
Saw what?
Early this evening, when it was getting dark. We were walking down Rue Martinez. It's a very narrow street with 2 3-story buildings. I saw a shop that sold antiques. I was looking through the window when I felt something pass very close. It felt like static electricity. My hair went fizzy.
Do you see it?
No.
Did you feel it?
Yes. What is it?
Over there. Do you see?
No.
See? It's moving.
I don't see.
There. Where I'm pointing? Do you see?
No.
Now it's moving.
Oh, yes. There's a kind of a rippling, like something...
Fuzzy. Do you see?
Well, maybe.
It's like a fuzzy cocoon. It's hovering.
Oh, yes.
You can see it?
I think so.
See how it just floats?
Is it like fuzzy and over?
Yes, that's it.
We followed it up the street. Sometimes it blended in with the buildings and I'd lose it, but Bunny saw it clearly. When it would pass through light coming from a window, then I couldn't see it at all.
You said it looked like a cocoon?
It was like a fuzzy egg, only more elongated, but not solid.
Was it aware that you were following?
No, not at first.
What was it doing?
See the way it's moving its arms?
I can't see any arms.
It's waving its arms back and forth.
How many arms does it have?
Just two.
Why is it waving?
I don't know.
Someone's coming. They walked right through it. They never saw it.
You said the way it was moving its arms.
I couldn't see the arms.
But Bunny felt it was bestowing blessings.
That's what she said, yes.
You saw only one?
I think one was enough.
What are we talking about?
The fuzzy one.
What fuzzy one?
It was Bunny. She called it that. I can't see it now. Can you?
Just barely.
But where is it going? The street ends down at the bay.
It's moving out across the water. Now I don't see it.
Bunny had seen them before.
More than one?
That's what she said.
Was it scary?
Yes, of course. It was like a spirit.
I assume they're from the Ghost Islands. Right, Claudine?
Yes, they are.
So the islands are inhabited, but by what? Spooks?
This was not a spook.
Have you met many spooks?
No, but Bunny said they are something other than spirits.
Look, what's the deal, Claudine?
I'm going back to the boat. I need to be alone. Salut.
Salut, Claudine.
God, I would give anything if I could get just one straight answer.
Maybe Claudine is protecting you.
From what? The truth?
We are not always ready for the truth.
Well, I sure as hell am.
I figured there were things looking around here.
How come Bunny saw them, but you didn't?
There's something knows you can see it, and it doesn't want to be seen. It can do a pretty good job of staying unseen.
I see.
Unless it slips up. And then I can catch him.
But not physically.
No. You don't want to grab for something unless you know what you're grabbing.
Let's talk to Bunny.
Claudine asked me not to talk about them.
She asked you or told you?
She asked me.
She told you not to talk to Mosheli me.
That was implied.
Oh, man. You're being shut out.
Did she also tell you not to talk to Dominique?
No.
I knew it. It's a female conspiracy.
Bunny, listen to me. It's important that you tell your captain everything you know about whatever they are.
The fuzzy ones.
Yeah, the fuzzy ones, right.
No.
What?
Try a command, Captain Jack.
Bunny, I command you. Tell your captain everything you know.
No.
If you don't tell him, he'll toss you in the brig.
We don't have a brig.
Well, I'll build one and tow it behind the boat.
No.
Bunny, aren't you curious about what's going on here?
Of course.
Then why don't we share some information?
Because Claudine asked me not to talk about it.
But wouldn't you like to know what I know?
You don't know anything.
Mojo, you're not helping.
Is that all? Am I excused, Capitaine?
Yeah, okay. You're dismissed. I'll beat it.
Ciao, mon capitaine.
I think your crew is getting a little mutinous.
Well, I'm not giving up.
Claudine's always two moves ahead of you.
Yeah, but why is she always so secretive?
Maybe she just doesn't want us making things worse.
Mojo, when do we ever make things worse?
Oh, man, you want me to tell you all the time?
Well, it may have appeared that way, but ultimately everything turns out for the best, right?
I don't know about ultimately, but look at the mess we make before that happens.
Walter, that's my point. It's a means to an end.
Yeah, but sometimes those ends can be real mean.
Lost your soul. になっている。周りに猫がいる。何匹もなんか祝いって感じでみんな踊ったりしてる。それから私の体全身超軽くなって、もう人間の体じゃない。あの下の雲みたいにめっちゃふわふわ。猫たちは素晴らしいなって言い続ける。それで認めなくちゃいけないね。本当に気持ちいいって。
That was Yuma no Sekai from Many Birthdays. Before that, we heard Hesitation by McRad. Me and my missing man are going to play next Saturday, January 27th in San Diego, for a benefit for the Do Good charity, doogood.org for the website. And McRad is playing along with us. Great musician, skater, Chuck Treese. That's his band from Philadelphia. And before them, we had Baptized in Shit by the Meat Shits. And we started the third hour off with part three of Jack Flanders in the Ghost Islands. Now here's some live Yummy Yummy I found.
Bless you for your soul. for your jealousy. It's a sign of empathy. Bless you for your fear. It's a sign of wisdom. Bless you for your search of direction. Bless you for the times you feel no love. Open your heart to life anyway. In time you'll find love in you.
Thank you.
sun comes up, I'll be on top. You be right down there, looking up. And I might wave, come up here, but I don't see you waving now. I'm way down here, wondering how I'm gonna get you, but I know now. I'll just cry, cry. I'll just cry. Too many teardrops for one heart to be crying. Too many teardrops for one heart to carry on. You're gonna cry 96 tears. You're gonna cry 96 tears. You're gonna cry, 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 cry now. You're gonna cry, 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 cry 96 tears. Come on, let me hear you cry now. 96 tears. Woo! I wanna hear you cry night and day. Yeah, all night long. 96 tears. Cry, cry, cry. Come on, baby, let me hear you cry now. All night long. 96 tears.
We started that set off with Funky Junkie, something live from Yummy Yummy, found on the internet. Revelations by Yoko Ono and Cat Power. Sean Marshall on the piano there behind Yoko. And then 96 Tears by Question Mark and Mysterians. Much empathy to Question Mark. He had his pad burned down in a fire and lost pretty near everything. Very tragic. If you can help out, or if you have any memories, he's asking for any memorabilia or memories. He's up there on the MySpace thing. He's got a page, Question Mark and Mysterians. Or I guess myspace.com/?and Mysterians. Or do a search. But man, what a great tune. 40 years ago, something. And it's still kicking. Love that organ. Pete Mazich. That's for you, Pete. And for you too, Q. Here's a band I saw in the 70s. Thank you.
каждому, каждому лучше не верится. Катится, катится голубой вагон.
Thank you.
That was Jenny Skeng with Great Britain. Before that, we had Yummy by Nobuko. Position Normal before that with a tune of theirs called Chebarashka. And we started with Faith Healer by the Sensational Alex Harvey Band. A band that never really was big and mainstream. Maybe they were Scotland, I think. Somewhere overseas. And I was just a teenager and I liked them because they were different. In fact, their lead guitar cat had makeup on before I saw Kiss. Do likewise. I don't know if they got the idea from him. I think his name was Zal or something. But, yeah, I saw Kiss a few times before they even had an album out. But and I dug it. But I dug Alex Harvey, too. He passed away a few years ago. He was kind of an older cat then, especially with all the young people in arena rock bands. Here's some Meters. You started off the last set for this edition of the Watt from Pedro show with Here Comes the Meter Man by the Meters. You know, I was a meter man. Back in the late 70s, I read meters for the Edison Company in Long Beach. And, I wrote a poem about it. I never gave a damn about the meter man till I was the man who read the meters, man. I had a lot of time to think about it. After that, we heard 78 by the South French Broads. And finally, theme from Cinema Paradiso by Petra Hayden. That's her on all the voices, a cappella. It's on the record she's working on right now, Petra Goes to the Movies. A bunch of movie things. I also heard her theme from the movie Psycho. Maybe we'll be playing that next time. She also did a trippy version of the Journey song called, it's their Don't Stop Believin'. It's going to be on this compilation of one of these guilty pleasure kind of things. And I've been asked to be on it too. The song picked for me was Burning for You, Blue Oyster Cult. So I'll be doing that in the next couple of weeks. Mr. Nels Klein on guitar and some other folks. And, I was way into Blue Oyster Cult, but not by that period. Even though Mr. Richard Meltzer, a big hero of mine, wrote the words. And Buck Dharma, he sings it, plays lead guitar, and that was a huge hero for D. Boone. Big inspiration to him. We loved Blue Oyster Cult when we were young. Especially first three albums and that live one after. On Your Feet or On Your Knees. The Amazing Blue Oyster Cult. Anyway, there's not a whole lot of talking on this edition. Just some self-spiel from Watt. I'm missing Brother Matt, you know. I like bouncing off of him by myself. I feel self-conscious and ridiculous. But I'm missing his spin cycle, too. Next week, I'm back. And we'll be at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, of course. I hope you enjoyed the spiel with Nels Klein. I can't say enough about that man. A pretty incredible cat in my musical universe. I'm going to be playing with him in Hollywood March 3rd in the Missing Men. Hope that's it for the January 18th edition. The 2007 of the Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.